There is a maze in the desert, carved from sand and rock. A vast labyrinth of pathways and corridors, 100 miles long, 1,000 miles wide, full of twists and dead ends. Picture it. A puzzle you walk, and at the end of this maze is a prize, just waiting to be discovered. All you have to do is find your way through. Can you see the maze? Its walls and floors, its twists and turns? Good. Because the maze you've created in your mind is itself the maze. There is no desert, no rock or sand. There is only the idea of it. But it's an idea that will come to dominate your every waking and sleeping moment. You're inside the maze now. You cannot escape. Welcome to madness.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to our podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Rima.
And this is Legion Cast episode 9, sort of, continuation. We have a special guest here, Aaron of Bald Move. Welcome to the show.
Woo-hoo. Thanks. It's the least you can do after you kicked Jim and I off.
Reality seems to have shifted.
It is. There's suddenly rapid clicking. There was a disabled Minotaur. And then suddenly we weren't on the show anymore. But now we are. I can't figure it out. Am I trapped in the pool? Are you the mysterious invisible butler that's keeping me there? What's happening?
I don't think we're ever gonna. I think next season we should just have three completely different people and not say a word
sure.
about it.
Sure. Yeah. Can they all be androgynous telepaths with mustache?
Yes.
It must have mustache.
That would seal the deal.
Yeah. And the main host will have a wicker basket over his head and not speak.
Perfect.
All right. I think that's good enough explanation of where we're at.
But it's got to be weirder, right? You can't like that's like
you
that,
can't
that's
just plagiarize.
That's, yeah, you gotta go further. I mean, they're putting baskets on head. We gotta put baskets on feet. I don't know.
Okay,
we gotta do something.
Maybe we can get like Paul Rubens in there or something.
There you go.
Perfect. I like it.
Well, now that we're all caught up, let's get into our top three highlights for Legion season 2, episode 1, entitled Chapter 9.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's going to be tougher now that you're talking to, you know, last year was easy because, like, you know, episode 1, chapter 1.
Right.
Now gonna have to do math.
It's all confusing. But I was wondering if they were gonna start getting creative with the titles, but they're keeping along with this whole chapter thing. Why did they do that?
Yeah.
Do you think
they didn't have any spare creativity left over after they did the actual scripts?
So they had to be completely exhausted after coming up with the concepts and the stories of all of these individual episodes. They're like, gosh, we don't even have enough energy to come up with the title.
Yeah,
our creativity is gone.
So I'll just say, what do you guys think of this episode in general? Like, did you like it, Aaron?
I thought this was an amazing return to form.
Nice.
Well, not even return to form, because it was at a high level of form last year. Mm-hmm. I was, I guess, worried that they'd have a hard time following up. And I was thinking, like, you know, you know, what's going to happen with that silly probe, and how are they going to get, like, you know, what's going to be like if, like, you know, they're like trying to hunt down David for his first three episodes.
Yeah, right.
Leave it to Noah Hawley to just essentially come back, flip the table over. There's entirely new players. There's entirely new management. The David being gone is kind of yada yada over for the first 90% of the episode. And then the last 10% just makes you go, what the fuck? I thought they took the Wes Anderson foundation, threw some David Lynch into it, and it's even better.
Nice. Yeah, you know, I'm glad that they, like you said, yada-yadded over it, because you want to jump right into the action. But at the same time, I was like, well, are we ever going to find out what happened? And I think
right.
we did. So that they did it. They did it right. What about you, Rima? How'd you like it?
I don't know that I can top anything that Aaron just said, because I totally agree with all of that. I really like how they didn't like go too hard into the whole probe thing, because I thought I mean, as interesting as what it was, you know, how they ended it last season, I was like, how are they going to, you know, come back to this and get him? And I'm glad they didn't, again, spend a lot of time on that, that we just jump right into it. And we got some new characters. We got the mix of the characters, which I thought was really interesting because it was definitely on a different scope than what we saw last season. So I like how it's a little bit different. And I think it was a really good mix. And they took what worked last season and just really kind of put that at the forefront, I feel, this season. And I thought it was an amazing beginning to the season. It's so hard for a TV show, I think, to come out like Legion did last season and keep up that momentum. I thought they did a great job.
Yeah, and after having spent a year away from the show and barely knowing what the hell was going on when I was right there watching it, you know, and just haven't really thought about it, and we're dropped right into the middle of the action, and I felt like there's an intentional similarity between us and David, because he thinks he's only been gone for an hour, but everything around him is changed, and he's disoriented, and I felt a little disoriented, so it was kind of nice to have Patonomy sitting there explaining to him what's been going on.
Yeah.
So we could get caught up. But yeah, it was cool. I think they changed, I know they did. They've changed filming locations, and they were in Vancouver and now they're in LA. So they don't have the whole Summerland set anymore. And I don't know if that's what prompted the plot, but it was cool to just get dropped into a whole new status quo and bring back a lot of the things that made Legion one of my favorite shows last year, but added some new stuff and did it all pretty well. So I liked it too. All right, let's get into our top three. Aaron?
I mean, I got to lead with the audio visual stuff because just there's so many individually beautiful or disturbing things, like anywhere from like the chattering of teeth, you know, it reminds me of like how unnerving that sound is when you just see like a whole room full of people. There's one that's this, I forget who it is. It's some guy involved at Penny Arcade, but anytime they're given like a public speech, when there's like more than 500 people in the room, he always starts it off by asking the whole audience to pop their knuckles in unison.
Oh, and wow.
It's this eerie, weird, wet popping, like just like it's utterly revolting.
And
it just makes a shiver run through your spine. And it reminded me of this and that this episode stuffed with, you know, deformed baby chicks made out of black goo. And but then there's also just like beautiful things like the cold open in the pool where Lenny and
Oliver
are chilling out and being kind of held, I guess, mentally hostage. The framing of the first kiss of David and Sid after they've been reunited. The admiral wearing the basket head, the hair suit, telepathic androgynous triplets, the fantasy sequence of Shuang Zhu and dreaming he's a butterfly, there's stuff on the show that you're not going to see anywhere else outside of, like I said, Twin Peaks: The Return. And television, I think, needs more weird stuff, and this show delivers in spades.
Watching this show, sometimes I feel like there could be more depth to it. I mean, there's definitely intrigue and there's humor and there's just delight. There's tons of delight. That's the thing. Everything you're talking about is delightful. So that makes up for a lot for me. And I think there is depth, but there could be even more. I feel like that's an area where they could add, but there's just so much to look at and to so much cleverness going on the screen that I'm totally into the world the whole time. The teeth thing, one thing I really liked about that is you heard the sound first and didn't know what it was, and so it wasn't disconcerting until you saw what it was. And then I was like,
I didn't know what it was, but even just the noise, that was, I'm going to use the same word as Aaron had, because that's what I wrote down as well, was it was unnerving. I did have a shiver down my spine, and even just hearing it, it was like, ugh, I don't know what that is, but I don't like it. And then, of course, when we see it and how creepy it was that they're all just standing there frozen in that room, didn't like that.
We still don't really know what was going on. Like, does that just happen in his wake, or is it part of something he's a plot or what, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they need to get the, because it's my understanding that these people are stored away someplace at Division 3. Because I think at one point when you're panning around the facility, you see like this dark basement and it's just full of these people. Am I the only one that got
that? They're
just
picking them all up and...
Maybe, because they're definitely investigating, and I don't know why you would just leave a house full of people or a dance hall full of people just chattering their teeth, but like, make them some mouth guards.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know? Get a dentist in there, because that's like that bruxism will kill you.
Yeah, that's the
you can't
humane
be crying in your
response.
Teeth. Yeah, yeah,
definitely.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was really confused about exactly where they were, because you saw Tonomy and Clark when they found David, which I don't think it was really clear exactly how they found him. But when they find him, and then he's kind of like in this strange place with his eyes kind of rolling around, and he talks about the maze, which we had just kind of gotten a little bit of narration on. And then you see them walking, going into another room and opening up that door and seeing all of them standing there. I don't quite understand where they were exactly, but I know they kind of gave each other like a knowing glance. And so it was confusing, but it was very just disconcerting, the noise and just the weirdness of having random people standing still in a dark room with their eyes open, chattering their teeth.
I doubt this was intentional, but it kind of reminded me how back in X-Men comics, Professor X would go into an area a lot of times and just freeze everybody.
Right.
And then have the X-Men do whatever they needed to do, just with no regard to whether or not that was a violation of people.
Right. Oh, speaking of the comic book stuff, is like, because, you know, one of the visuals that I thought was defining of the episode was the psychic dance-off. I thought it's so refreshing to see, because like one of the things that I find happens in X-Men movies a lot is the phenomenon of like two characters that are like floating in a ball of debris that's orbiting them, and they're just like shooting beams at each other, and it's like, what the hell is going on? Mm-hmm. Like the idea that you can have this. And like in the old comic books, I remember like Professor X going into the mindscaping Doom battle with the Shadow King, and he's got the spectral suit of armor, and the Shadow King is this enormous dragon made out of energy or whatever. And like just having them doing a dance off was, and have that like struggle of will like be portrayed that way. Just like, again, I don't know what these people are on, what they're smoking, how many elephants they're vaping, keep doing it. Keep doing it, because that's sweet.
Yeah. So are you 100% sure that was all on the mental plane, the dancing?
Hell no. I mean, you remember last season, up to like episode 6, I'm like, I don't know how I feel about this, what's real, what's not real, because I was disappointed in season 2 of Fargo, and I had my dukes up with Noah Hawley in the room. Like, I don't trust this guy. But now that Legion season 1 was beautiful and Fargo season 3 was beautiful, like, I don't care. Like, it will all be made... it will all be illuminated in the fullness of time, and I'm gonna go into the season trusting that, because who the hell knows?
Why not? Yeah, man, I agree. I don't want to get into it too much, but I also loved Fargo season 3, and I was just thinking that this is Noah Hawley's first time, as far as I know, that he has a season 2 of a series with a continuation
continuity
of the same story and the same cast and everything.
So, and he just seems like he just keeps getting stronger as a storyteller.
Yeah, yeah. And he's writing the Doctor Doom movie. I don't know if that's in the news, Rima, but he's going to direct it too, apparently.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
Good
I think,
stuff.
Rima, we're on your number 3.
Yeah, well, I think we covered a lot of it, because my number 3 was the teeth chattering. So the only other things that, I mean, I don't understand it, and I certainly don't have a whole lot of insight to offer, that's for sure. But I know that they talked a little bit about it, that, or at least Sid was trying to explain to David that, you know, that this was due to, that they're calling it the catalyst, because they're, as they're like chasing Oliver, who is, I guess, inhabited by Farouk, similar to David was in season 1, that wherever he's been, they're finding these people just standing there frozen, chattering their teeth. And they're saying that it's psychological, they're infecting people, they're frozen in place. And it's like, are they, so I'm just trying to figure out how do they stay infected? I don't know that that was explored much. I don't know if it'll be explored later. Like, do they eventually get like kind of knocked out of it after they've been out of his presence, or do they stay like that? Do they have a cure? Like Aaron said, are they at least popping a mouth guard in there to protect the choppers? I don't know. But
they'll explore it, I bet. There's a lot to explore.
There is a lot to explore. That's
unexplained and left.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like as far as like to build off what Rima's saying, as far as David's now expelled the Shadow King, maybe. but like it's tough because I think I don't know if we talked about this last year, but it seems to me that the idea of David is that he is a man with mental illness that's not necessarily caused by the Shadow King, that there might actually be some sort of trauma or some sort of chemistry imbalance that's on top of being possessed by this evil psychic entity. Mm-hmm. So it's like just because that's out of his head, I don't know that David is fine and he's suddenly going to be an ultra reliable narrator.
Right.
That's one of the things, like there's so many layers of reality. Like mm-hmm. when you're talking about things being real, are you talking about David thinking that they're true? Because that's a very loose use of the word real, because he's not necessarily have everything together upstairs.
And he was so powerful at the end of last season that you could almost believe he could shape reality around him without even knowing it too. So we really just don't know. But I just came up with a theory while you were saying that Farouk was in him for most of his life, and that probably fucked him up to one degree or another. But I think you're right. I think there's, in this episode, last season we heard whispering in his head occasionally, but it was...
I think it's because he could read minds,
kind of
right?
Rare. Well, no, that's not what I think. I think it's because he has other people in there. And I think now that Farouk is gone, that those are becoming more prominent, that maybe having such a dominant force in there suppressed the other voices in his head.
Shadow King was the Saddam Hussein of his mental Iraq.
The dictator of his mind.
So it's a free-for-all in there. And for the first time, I think, now we're actually hearing clear voices in his head talking to each other, like when he went into the Admiral Fukuyama, and one of the voices was like, weird. And then the other one's like, read his mind. His mind? Their mind. So they're like having a conversation inside his head.
I think you're right about that. Does this mean that Sid is George Bush and Melanie is Dick Cheney?
I'd have to think about that. Yeah,
because that's a joke. But I did find it striking that they pull this guy out of some orb state. He is this uber powerful telepath that's not stable and had very traumatic things happen to him. And one of the first things they do is pop him in a proto-cerebro that enhances his powers.
Yeah, boost
like,
it.
That seems foolhardy to the extreme, but I don't know what they're up. I mean, if they're trying to get keep Farouk from reuniting with his body, maybe that's like an existential threat that they're just throwing. But I felt like they're throwing caution to the wind, but I wasn't necessarily sure I got that from the show. That was my perception, but I'm not sure if that's what the characters were thinking.
Yeah. I mean, it really seemed to be a bigger part of the story, if I remember right, at the end of last season, that he was in a more powerful state, and everybody around him realized that. But now he seems back to his sort of unassuming self. He's not really exercising his powers that much.
Right.
But I'm sure that'll change over the course of the season.
I was just going to say, I don't know that I entirely agree that he's still mentally ill, but because I do think it is his powers. And I think that, I mean, he was messed with by Farouk since he was a baby in the womb. The Shadow King, but as he was, Lenny told him, we've known each other since the womb. So he's infected him all this time, and he's kind of used the energy of his powers to be able to survive and sustain himself since he didn't have his own body. And now that he's free of that, I don't disagree that he doesn't maybe have some mental illness, just based on the fact of having some parasite that has infected him and his entire life and taken control of his body, that maybe that has, I could see like some sort of like PTSD or something, or something coming out of that, because how screwed up is that, to have that kind of situation. But now that he's free and has full capacity of his senses and his power, I think it's more of his powers coming to light. But I mean, I could see where he would maybe have some form of mental illness just based on the fact that he was possessed his entire life. So
scarred for life.
Yeah, definitely scarred for life.
I mean, we used to talk last year a lot about this show, sort of externalizing mental illness in the form of mutant powers. Or, I don't know if externalizing is the right word, but, you know, it's like it could be either or. It could be the power or an illness or a combination of both.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's, you know, like it's kind of six of one, half dozen the other, because like if the years of trauma has led to a diagnosable condition, then, you know, like it's genetics, it's environment, it's all this other stuff. But I just like, again, I'm not sure if it was inevitable that he would be having emotional and mental problems. But like, you know, it seems like he's probably going to struggle with them at this point. And, you know, I think. I would hope that maybe there's a way for him to eventually, because like I think we talked about this last year. Is like, what do you want out of the show? And I was wanting him to, like, you know, be able to be healthy and happy and to accept love into his life. But I read an interview with Noah Hawley where he says that he sees this series as a tragedy, and one of the elements that defines a tragedy is, you know, obviously a tragic outcome, but the tragedy implies something that was able to be prevented. It wasn't inevitable, which makes it me seem like I'm not going to get what I'm looking for out of this show, which is fine. I just say that, like, if the creator himself saying this is a tragedy, a Greek style tragedy, then yikes.
But do you really want that? I mean, like, it seems like, to me, that in pretty much every show, especially the kind of shows that we like, the dark shows, that you get to know the characters, and if you think of them in terms of, oh, you know, if this guy was my friend, I would want the things that you said you wanted for David. But to make a good show, then you have to have conflict and disappointments and things like that, don't you think?
But you can have Don Draper created a perfect Coke ad. And smiled. And that's how we left him. And he's now narrating
Benny,
the show.
Benny, right? Coincidence? John Draper.
Coincidence? I think not.
I think John Hamm would make a great sort of Rod Serling replacement for some new Twilight Zone that they would cook up.
Oh, he's already in Black Mirror, that one Christmas
right,
episode.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So but it, just the way he was Twilight narrating it,
door.
I could picture.
Oh, yeah.
Him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah, awesome.
My turn. So number three is the new status quo for the good guys. So after being out for what Sid says is 362 days, David wakes up and he's in a new place. And by the way, I looked it up, and the season one finale was March 29th, 2017. And 362 days later was March 26th, 2018. So that was just a few days ago. So I wonder if they had that in mind for the timing of that, and maybe he was awake a few days before he saw Sid and she said that. I don't know. Maybe there's nothing to it. But anyway, so he finds out that they are all a part of Division 3 now, which, if I remember right, they'd kind of been working at odds with last year, because Division 3 didn't trust mutants and wanted to contain the threat, and some of the elements within Division 3 wanted to eliminate mutants, and this guy Clark worked for them, and so did the Eye, right? He worked for Division 3.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so now they're all working together. Apparently Sid and Melanie have convinced the leadership that most mutants aren't a threat, and so now they're working together to fight their real enemies. The only one we really know of is the Shadow King. Scientist Carrie works in research, and the other Carrie in tactical. Sid and Melanie are in strategy, and their new goal is they want David to help find the Shadow King so they can kill him. And he was careful to say he didn't want to kill the host body, Oliver, but then you find out that Farouk Amal's body is hidden somewhere, and if he were to rejoin his body, then he would be unstoppable. So it's a race to find his body. I assume that the guy that we saw after the camera zoomed out from the opening scene of Oliver and Lenny in the pool, you know, we see this guy with the Eiffel Tower in the background out the window. Mm-hmm. That I think that's probably
the Nazi war criminal on the run looking
yeah.
guy.
Yeah.
I think that's him.
I'm under the assumption, and from what little I've heard about season two, that is
right,
supposed
right.
to be him, his body. Yeah.
Now, my question is, does his body know that he is the Shadow King? Or is he somehow like a reverse David where he has no idea that this all, like, because, like, I mean, obviously the Shadow King doesn't know where his own body is, right? Or he'd just be there all, he just take, you know, book the first flight to Paris and done deal.
So, like, let's meet here.
Yeah, that's where, like, because I saw, like, a lot of people analyzing that and saying that's the guy. I knew he was something, but, like, it kind of blew me away that he was the Shadow King because it looked like he was out in the real world moving around. And I'm like, well, if you got your mental part of you detached, wouldn't you, like, I assumed he'd be in some kind of, like, get up like they had, I keep forgetting Jermaine Clement's name. Oliver. Mm-hmm. Last year, he'd be on ice somewhere in like some kind of government lab, but he's out living his life in the real world. Like, what do we make of that?
But was he, or is that like the astral plane?
Yeah, my interpretation of that, we see Oliver and Lenny in the pool, and they're laughing, but kind of in almost a pained way that they're trapped. And they're getting drinks delivered, which I feel like is to placate them so they can be subdued. And then you zoom out to this, what I think is a manifestation of the real physical appearance of the Shadow King. But I still think that that's saying that he's inside Oliver's body. Because then you zoom out a third time and you see Oliver in the nightclub, which I think is the real world. So I think what that means is Oliver and Lenny, maybe Lenny, fuck, I don't know. Lenny's a whole different thing. But they're trapped and they don't have any agency in the real world because the Shadow King is inside there. I'm making signs with my hands, but you can't see. But he's inside there keeping them under wraps. And then he's from within Oliver's body. He's totally in control of Oliver's body. Did that make sense?
Yes.
It does. Yes.
Because that's how I understood it as well. Does.
But
after
we don't
watching
know.
It,
I mean,
four
we just
times.
Don't know.
On my fourth watch, it started to make sense.
A couple more things about the status quo. I thought it was interesting that throughout this complex that they're in, there's intercom announcements that it kind of sounds like probably they have enemies who can control minds, so it's coaching them to be vigilant. But it also seemed like they were being treated like mental patients. It's like, beware of ideas that are not your own. Mm-hmm. Know your symptoms, confusion, irritability, repetitive sounds, which repeating that made me wonder if she's having the symptoms or was that just a joke?
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, that was interesting. And then the last thing, we've got the boss, Admiral Fukuyama. We already mentioned him with the wicker basket over his head and his androgynous cohorts, but I thought that was pretty awesome.
What do you think about, or have you seen the theory, the Admiral Fukuyama, is that his name? Fukuyama?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That the Admiral Fukuyama and what's the Farouk's first name?
Amal,
that there's a phonetic similarity to those characters. Mm. And you've got a character who has a basket over his head we never see, and he speaks with three like other entities that he's like enthralled or that there's a connection between him and the Shadow King, because the Shadow King has, you know, has assumed control at various points of David, Lenny, and Oliver, which is his triune, and then the Admiral has his three vermilion ladies. I have no idea how they're trying to present or how they feel about themselves. It's a fucking minefield. as soon as they let me know their preferred pro of right now, and he's got them that, like, so I thought that was a little thin, but on the other hand, you know, it would be just like the Shadow King to capture the agency that's out to try to find him.
I mean, what was interesting to me is he seems like a mutant, this Admiral, but it seemed like that organization was pretty fearful of mutants and even, you could say, anti-mutant before. So was he in control the whole time?
I don't know.
We never saw him in season one. We saw one guy kind of in charge during that whole pool scene whenever they had David and they were interrogating him at the pool. And there was a guy with some soldiers behind the scenes talking into a walkie-talkie to Clark and kind of feeding them information and stuff. But I don't know that he was really identified or we knew who he was or that he was in charge. I don't think there was any mention of this admiral in season one. I just rewatched it, and I didn't see
new character. Yeah.
And there's also, we knew that they employed mutants in their, you know, tactical teams before anyway. So I guess it would be
right. I forgot about that.
It would be odd for the mutant to be you know, the head of things, but you know, we see in real life that there's a lot of the one, like, you know, how many times have we seen senators and representatives that are virulently anti-gay agenda or pro-family, and they're, you know, secretly gay or buying their mistress's abortion.
Absolutely.
So sometimes the people leading the charge,
a lot of projecting going on.
Yeah, like he's like if you're a closeted gay man, you're in the closet. Maybe if you're a closeted mutant, you're in the basket.
New term.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I just want everyone listening to know that Aaron is invited to come on any episode. Any episode you want to come. Come on, all of them. All right.
If I had time, I would. Yeah, it's things have been crazy for me of late.
What's your number two?
Oh, my number two. Honestly, this is just a little like a word gag, but it made me really happy because I spent my early adolescence like reading all the X-Men, the Uncanny X-Men, X-Force, X-Factor, and then of course New Mutants.
Yes.
And I loved when Ptolemy said, you know, we're talking about the New Mutants threat.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that David I think at one point this was outside of the timeline I read, but a member of the New Mutants. I just like that. You know, this little show's on its own little island, right? They've got Sony has got, you know, the X-Men and this and Gambit and this other stuff, and they're playing, and then Marvel Studios has got their thing. It's big and there's making billions of dollars, and Netflix has got, and then this, there's poor little Legion over here, the little guy. And I feel like that New Mutant spirit was cool, and I liked that they name checked it. Mm-hmm. It just made the comic nerd inside me very, very happy.
Absolutely. Yeah. So David Haller first appeared in New Mutants, and he wasn't in the New Mutants. I don't know if he ever was, but he was almost an antagonist. I mean,
gotcha.
He was sort of not very much in control of himself, so he was dangerous whether he wanted to be or not. But it was also drawn by Bill Sienkiewicz. Do you know who that is?
It doesn't ring a bell.
His art is just so different than any comic art, and it's very almost sloppy and just ink splattered all over and dark. And he drew David Haller with, you've probably seen, with his hair spiked up and all.
Yeah,
good stuff. I always like that storyline. All right, Rima.
Okay, so my number two, we've covered a lot of it, but I'll just add to it, talking about David returning. So we get him right away, and of course we've talked a lot about as he's, you know, asking the questions and coming back into the group and finding out, you know, he feels he's only been gone a day, if even that, and find out that it's like been a year. But just to kind of take a little bit of a deeper dive into that, as we're going through the episode and you know, Ptolemy has sat with him, and he can kind of see inside of his mind, and he's seeing memories. David is telling folks that he's like, I don't remember anything. I remember trees. I remember a rooftop, you know, downtown in the city. And I just think it's interesting that, and I don't know that we'll figure it out anytime soon. Hopefully we'll find out sometime at the end of the season. Like, is David lying to himself about what happened or what he remembers, or is he lying to the others? Sid believes he's keeping something from her, and Ptolemy said that he saw memories. Clark thinks that there's more there than what David is admitting to, and I just thought I'd see what you guys thought about all of that.
I mean, the main sequence that we see him remember while he's in that contraption that Carrie made, which was made to help him access his memories, I think, was the whole dance off. And it seems like he's pretty clearly remembering that. But then when he talks to Sid, he says, oh, it was all just random and I don't know. So I think he's lying about that. It seems like he's lying to her about that, and he doesn't want her to know that he remembers it for some reason. I do think he was, when he first, you know, was disoriented and came back, because he did mention something about a dance openly then. So I don't think he's just got all the, I think that did just come back to him while he was in that chamber, but then he lied about it. And we saw at the very end, he starts kissing Lenny. And I don't know if that was supposed to be a big deal or not, but maybe that was part of why he didn't want Sid to know about it. I don't know.
Yeah, and there's like, I mean, that's, you know, that's like a riddle wrapped in an enigma inside a mystery. The whole, like, is David lying? Because there is the fact that he doesn't remember everything. There's also the fact that, you know, as he, like, you know, in his position, he's been out for God knows how long. He wakes up and the world is completely upside down from how he thought it was at the end. And, like, everyone's kind of behaving strangely and... there's new players and how much, you know, a guy who's had his mind fucked for as long as he has, how can you ever trust anything? Maybe he's trying to like play his cards close to the vest till he figures out that, oh, this is actually not an elaborate construct that I'm in the Shadow King or Division 3. They're trying to extract some information from me that's going to hurt my friends. Is Sid really Sid? Like, how does he know anything? So I actually thought him... And he started to get into that when Sid challenged him, like, why are you keeping secrets? And he's like, you think I'm the one acting strange, like, from your perspective, you know, like, but it's great because they have this beautiful thing where they showed, you know, the parallel structure of Melanie relating to Sid and, like, you know, her losing Oliver for how long and then getting him back and him being snatched away and feeling like you're the woman who just has to wait while your badass man goes off and conquers the world and you're just kind of in his way. And, you know, so Sid lived with that reality, whereas David, it's like a you know, finger snap and here's all this crazy stuff happening. So I thought it was actually realistic to have him. Maybe he's lying, maybe he's not. Maybe he's just testing the waters to see who he can trust and what he can trust even.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe he doesn't even realize he's lying. I mean, they talked in season one about how, like, and I know that he's or less, I guess we can assume he's free of Farouk right now, but, like, Farouk could, like, control what he remembered. He couldn't even remember all of his own memories because they were in fragments. So maybe he's kind of doing that kind of same thing to himself. He may not even know for himself what the truth is, or if he's lying, he could have some sort of mental block. But I just thought all of that was just really interesting in thinking about, you know, that we don't know and maybe he doesn't even know what the truth is. But I thought that the whole dance-off thing, I thought the reason for him being in that tank was for them to reach out to try to find Oliver or the Shadow King, and that dance-off happened, like, in real time. I didn't know that. I didn't really think that as, like, a past.
I agree with you, Rima. I thought... That's was my take on it, that this is essentially the version of Patrick Stewart going into Cerebro and seeing ghostly light people all over this crazy visualization of the globe, that this was David essentially trying to psychically track down.
Right, like kind of sticking his mental fingers that was my interpretation, that he...
I mean, the reason why I didn't know is because they said they found him in a club. And when he went into that machine, it was to access his memory. So I thought he went back to the club where they found him and saw. But yeah, who knows?
You're right. And like that stuff is like, you know, deliberately confusing because they found him in the club of everybody full of chattering people. And here's a club full of dancing people. Like, you know, what is the metaphor? What's the real? What's, you know, true from some bullshit Obi-Wan Kenobi certain point of view angle? Like who knows?
Yeah, it's easier to take all of this not knowing because last season started similar, and then by the end of it we had a pretty good picture of what the hell was going on. So I think now we can trust and hope that it goes the same way this season, because if it doesn't, then I won't like it as much.
If you want to talk about brass tacks, there are already a lot of signifiers about what is real and not real. And the disturbing thing is almost everything could be argued is not totally being real, there's always like, oh, there's a creeping tar baby chick that's creeping under the bed in this scene. And oh, did you notice that in David's flashback to a school scene, there's that stupid, demented, crutch-wearing Minotaur creeping down the hallway. And when he first gets into the sensory deprivation tank and his eyes turn white, there's a brief, like, almost subliminal flash of the goat demon or whatever it is. And, like, what is that? Because... the overarching theme of we have to get to Farouk's body before he reunites because he'll be too powerful to stop, with at the end, no, we have to help him find his body presumably because there's something even scarier out there that we have to combine to fight against. Is the Minotaur that existential threat, or is that just a lie that he's trying to manipulate David into doing his own bidding? Like, that's the wheels in the wheels, man. And there's evidence in almost every scene that you know, because there's people doing drugs and there's people having psychic breakdowns and there's, you know, psychic dance-offs. Like, what's real and what's not? there's boats with waffles sailing down tables.
The buffet
is that
boats.
Real? Is that a real place? If so, I want to visit.
Exactly. I thought the same.
This would be a show to take a heavy dose of acid and then watch it. Maybe it would all just seem
normal.
Like, yeah, it'd be yeah. The equivalent of like playing a Beatles album forwards. It just makes sense. Oh, this was, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Exactly. What were we thinking?
I just need a little psilocybin in my system, and now it's just everything makes sense.
If you guys, any of you do that, write it down. Send it to us.
And send me some, right, because I could use the insight.
Completely coherent enough to put thoughts on paper, of course.
Okay, I think it's my turn, right? So, right?
No, I
said New Mutants.
That was
I think
my
it's
number
Remus.
Two. So yeah.
Oh yeah. It is your turn. Yeah.
So mine's about just various stylistic choices, kind of catch all. But I liked the whole voiceover at the beginning. What I really liked about that is he's talking and you don't know who, and the screen is dark, and he's saying, you think maybe he's talking to another character, talking about a maze. Can you picture it? Good. The maze is now in your mind. There is only the idea of it, but it's an idea that will come to dominate your every waking and sleeping moment. You're inside the maze now. You can't escape. Welcome to madness. And it felt almost like he was talking to me, the viewer, because you are picturing that while he's talking about it. And it's like, oh, you've been trapped. It's almost nefarious. So I thought that was kind of a cool trick. We still don't really know. But when David's waking up, he mentions something about you're in the maze. So somehow that narrative was related to something in his reality.
I thought he was talking about the teeth chattering people that are in the maze.
Hmm.
Like they're trapped in madness.
There's something to that. And also, like, I didn't make this connection because I didn't see this creature didn't read as a minotaur to me. The thing that's kind of like on a disability. I don't know. It's like he's like on a skateboard and crutches. And but people said that he's a minotaur, which of course ties very strongly into the maze metaphor that the rest of the show uses. And remember, like last season, we analyzed like their use of circles and chains.
Yeah.
And this year it's like all about the honeycomb.
Hexagons.
And I wonder if this Minotaur thing, you know, I'm going crazy with the theory, but like if future Sid is telling the truth, I wonder if there is some bigger existential threat that's represented, like, you know, the Shadow King was the fat yellow bastard last season, was always lurking. I wonder if this demented Minotaur, this disabled Minotaur, is like the overarching threat of this season. Mm-hmm. That's kind of like hunting both the Shadow King and David down. I think that would be kind of a cool idea.
Because
otherwise, why, you know, why would the Shadow? Yeah, why? I mean, I guess that's a stupid question. Why would the Shadow King? You know, why would he appear as David's dog? And then, like, you know, it's like, why does he do anything?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of miss the fat bastard.
Oh,
yeah.
I don't.
I wonder if he'll be back.
He creeped me out.
I hope so. Another stylistic thing you already mentioned, but the whole delusion egg animation thing was super cool. My favorite part of it was the narrators talking about, you know, we have many ideas. Most die, and then you hear a crunch, and Lenny just crunched that chick off camera before they can grow. But then, yeah, you see that tar-covered alien chick going around killing all the rational ideas. That was good. The whole design of the new digs with the hexagons everywhere and it feels kind of Vegas-y to me. There's lots of neon and they're in that diner, the 70s looking diner. It's cool to have a different look to the show. David has a new shirt, which means I have to get a new shirt because I bought his old triangle shirt last year.
Nice.
But me too.
Now it's like 3D, and I wonder if that means like signifying there's more dimensions to the show this season or something like that. I don't know. It just looked really nice. It was funny too. My favorite was the scene with Carrie explaining this chamber to David, and he gets into he's like, "How do you feel about small spaces? I'm against them. And when I say the words pitch black, what exactly are you going to do to me?" And then Sid's like, "Close off, handsome." Just that, you know, cute interaction between people who know each other. Then Carrie's like chastising girl Carrie. "You make people feel uncomfortable. Get in." All that stuff. The whole thing with Lenny and Oliver at the beginning, how he doesn't want to have any conversations about time. I don't know why, but it's funny to me. I mean, maybe that has something to do with him being stuck in the same place for a long time, all the time.
But yeah, I think it's like a makeup, something that he's doing to protect himself, because he's a powerful telepath in his own right as well, right?
Yeah, and here he is stuck mm-hmm. again. I mean, last season he was stuck, and now he's stuck again. I feel sorry for him.
You're talking about the new digs, and I also want to, you know, as I keep on like sprouting this theory in my mind as we're talking about it, but like they made a big point about how the facility is guarded by children, right? Because yeah. children under a certain age are resistant to the infection.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Doesn't that right away tell us that this infection is not from the Shadow King? Because he infected David at mm-hmm. birth, right? So it just seems like maybe that idea that there's a third threat is a little bit stronger, because mm-hmm. if it was the Shadow King, why would children be a protection from him?
Yeah. I mean, it could be a different mechanism that's not effective on kids, but still comes from him. But yeah, now that you say that, it makes sense to think that, oh, maybe it is from something else.
And also, David's a powerful mutant, so there's that. That's a vector too.
The Shadow King was inhabiting David during season one, and there was no mention of anyone being infected like that when they were around him for any period of time. So why is it now when he's inhabiting yeah, right. Oliver that people are now all of a sudden coming down with this condition and being infected? So yeah, it may not be him. They're attributing it to him, but I think they don't even know, because they just say, well, it seems to be that's, you know, where Oliver has been. Mm-hmm. And then we find these infected people. I don't even think they know the answer to that.
Because it could be like that, because they, you know, like, I guess my conception is the Shadow King, like his powers kind of combine with the powers that he inhabits people with. Right. So like if he's inside David, maybe that's like being inside an M1 Abrams tank. Mm-hmm. And if he's inside Oliver, maybe it's like driving a Ferrari. So like he's got slightly different suite of abilities. So I'm now poking holes in my own theory that like, yeah. you know, maybe this new chatter infection is because he is now meshed with Oliver and his mojo is working with his in a different way than right. his mojo was working with David.
That's true.
That reminds me, I was wondering why Sid was licking her hand and washing her hair with it. And then she was petting the cat, and I'm like, well, I guess that's what her power is, right? She just kind of absorbs the psyche of whatever she
bodies.
Touches.
Yeah, she switched bodies. She switched with a cat.
It's hilarious. All right. Aaron. Well, and the other stylistic thing, which we already covered, but is just the dance routine, which I thought was really cool, and I liked it a lot.
Yeah, they keep on finding excuses to have Carrie show off his, you know, mime clown
right
sick dance move skills in the
I
show.
Liked it.
I did too.
And what was that like? I guess it was just some kind of psychic residue being emanated out of the chamber, and he caught a wind of it or something.
I mean, Carrie's is kind of because wasn't he dancing and prancing around his lab last year too?
Was he?
Yeah.
I mean, I
yeah.
know that actor. He's known for that. He's.
Yeah.
He's
yeah,
a little quirky, yeah. I think. But yeah, he did that whenever it was like a pseudo dance, but it wasn't. It was when Carrie, the girl Carrie, was fighting some of those Division 3 soldiers after they found that missing doctor that
right.
had treated David. And she's out in the woods, and she's, you know, they're surrounding her in a circle, and she's just, you know, kicking ass. And as, you know, she would like do like a high kick and knock one of them out, he would kick with the broom handle that he had in his lab, and he was kind of miming mm-hmm. some of her same moves. So yeah, That was fun.
Did you guys watch Popeye with Robin Williams?
A yes. long time ago,
yes,
man.
Yes, loved it.
Yeah. So the guy, there's one guy in Sweet Haven who would always like fall over and then do a somersault and pop back up. That's him, Bill Irwin. That's Carrie.
Okay.
No way.
I did not make that
wow.
connection.
Wow. I didn't know he's that old. Damn.
He's physical. I know. At least I'm pretty sure that's him.
I like him.
I know for a fact he was Mr. Noodles on Sesame Street.
That's right.
Just before I got on, I saw that on Reddit on the r/LegionFX.
Hey, Mr. Noodle.
Yeah, someone posted a mashup of it was Mr. Noodle, but I forget he was they put a different track on underneath. It was like, I don't know, risque.
What's your number one?
Well, I'm glad you said something about Sydney practicing on the cat, because my number one is, like, I love the character of Sydney. I think she's fascinating. I think she's cool. She's probably my favorite part of the show, and opening on her, like, where she's licking herself and, like, grooming herself and, like, what in the hell? And you pan out and she's got that cat on her lap and she's explaining that she's, like, trying to gain, you know, practice using her powers. I thought that was super cool. I really loved her interaction with Melanie and, you know, showing Melanie finally, like, you know, after years of losing Oliver and getting him back, she's now turning to, like, you know, self-medicating, I presume, to deal with that pain. And, like, you know, Sydney, heard that beautiful scene of her holding her breath while the kettle was boiling, to kind of, like, play this game about whether David's still alive. I thought their sex scene was really, you know, PG-13 hot. I thought that especially the final scene of her and her, she's, like, trying to communicate with David through pantomime, was super interesting, and so David Lynch. And which brings me to the last thing I want to discuss, and, like, kind of, like, you know, use this as the pigeonhole in the overarching future, is what do we make about the story of the man who thought his leg was not controlled by him anymore and cut it off, with the fact that Sid was missing her left arm throughout that entire... Future Sid is missing her left arm in her interactions with David and doing the pantomime.
I totally did not notice she was missing her left arm.
I did not notice she was missing her left arm. The whole, like, little squiggly thing that she was doing with that wand that she was holding just totally captivated me that I didn't even know.
Yeah.
Wow, that's insane. Yeah, because the whole delusion sequence... I didn't know what, if anything, to connect it with in the episode, because, you know, it's not 100% clear that anyone in this episode is severely delusional, but like we've said, they could all be.
Which is another way of saying everyone is probably severely delusional.
Yeah.
But, you know, the other thing to add to the intrigue is the Minotaur is also missing one of his legs, which is why he's on the little scooter, mobility scooter with his... With his crutches.
Yeah.
So I don't know, like, is that showing that, like, Sid had a delusion that she ripped away from herself, like, psychically? Because, like, I assume everything happening in this little probe is on some sort of psychic plane.
Hmm.
That makes me inclined to trust future Sid. But she's also saying, hey, help the Shadow King find his body, which makes me not want to trust her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, I just thought that was a real, like, you know, I love Sid. Love what the actor is doing with the role, and she, I thought, had some of the most interesting action kind of swirling around her this episode.
That sequence of the guy sawing off his own leg was so tense and just shocking, and I loved it. And yeah, now that you mentioned she has her arm cut off, I mean, there's sort of a theme, especially with David, of fighting against yourself or working against yourself or parts of yourself, not, you know, of fighting against other parts of yourself. So that kind of fits in with that theme, and maybe it has spread out to her. I don't know. She did have the David compass on that he gave her. She was wearing it around her neck, the older Sid. So that's another reason to maybe trust her, because, you know, nobody else necessarily would have known about that. Hmm. Do you trust her, Rima? Do you think it was really her?
I don't know if it was really her. I know it's supposed to be a future her, an older her. You could see how the shadows were playing across her face and how her face changed.
So cool.
Yeah. I loved that so much. So I don't know if that was really her and that's how we're supposed to take that, or if somebody was using her as a projection to fool David into
But what
you
do
know,
you think? What do you suspect?
I don't know what to think or what to suspect.
I trust her. I don't know why. I think David's a liar, by the way, but I trusted her.
I don't know. I think if people know how close that David and Sid are and how far they're willing to go for each other, that is exactly the person that you're going to use to try to get David in your corner and to use her as a projection to fool David get him to find Farouk's body. So, I mean, I really don't know. I'm just sitting here like I don't even know. And I don't know what
to think. You are, neither one of you are being honest with me right now, and I'm going to eat my bowl of ice cream because I don't know what else to do.
I'll take waffles.
We're not actually here. Sorry.
Right.
We're in the...
I have two questions. One, if older Sid could write stuff, why wasn't she just writing stuff the whole time? And two, if Ptolemy's power is to go back into people's memories and they don't trust that David is being honest about what he remembers, why don't they just go back into his memories? Yeah, those two things. But another thing about future Sid is she kept looking over her shoulder a couple of times, and I think there was some kind of a sound.
There, yeah.
And it made it seem... And she wasn't... She made it seem like she wasn't able to talk, but maybe that's because she's in some kind of a danger. Because my sense of it was that if it is what she's saying it is, she's actually in the future projecting herself back. So maybe she's in some kind of a danger situation and didn't have time or something.
She's trying to dodge that Minotaur, man. It's coming.
If she didn't have the time, she should have been a little bit quicker about, instead of drawing out symbols, she should have been just putting out words, like, because we saw that she could spell words instead of doing all these symbols. So if she's in danger and in a hurry, then let's not play charades here. Let's just give him the message.
Get to the point. What is
your
number one?
Of course, it wouldn't have been as beautiful, of course.
Rima. I know. It was damn cool. I especially like that she tried to make an hourglass and it looked like an eight and she had to do it over.
I know. It was funny. Okay, so my number one, you kind of covered it already, but mine was the theme of a delusion as an idea. And so Aaron, you talked about the guy that, you know, had this idea planted and believed that his leg, you know, he could feel it, he could feel pain, it was attached to him, but he just didn't feel like it was his. And to me, I really loved the whole narration, just everything about it. John Hamm narrating from the very beginning, and then how it cut into different. It's like it cut the episode into different pieces, and you got the idea of the maze, and then how that came into the general idea of madness, and then how the delusion begins. The idea takes hold, and then the anecdote about the butterfly and Xing She. To me, that particular piece that we saw with the guy cutting off his leg was, it reminded me of like Inception, of where they like plant that idea deep into someone's mind, and once it takes hold, they don't let it go. It's like that's in them, and mm-hmm. and that's all that they see, and it takes them over. And to me, that's what that whole scene was like, that this, like, he trips and he's kind of looking at his leg, and then he just cannot let that idea go. And it becomes a delusion. And then he, of course, takes action. Yeah. And like what he says, you see, an idea alone isn't enough. We have ideas all the time, random thoughts and theories. Most die before they can grow. For a delusion to thrive, other more rational ideas must be rejected, destroyed. Only then can the delusion blossom into full-blown psychosis. I just thought all of that was brilliant, and I really liked it. And from what I understand, I think that we're going to see a continuation of that throughout the season. And that was just a high for me, that whole thing. And I love that it was John Hamm. I knew almost immediately that was him whenever it started. And I thought it was brilliant. Like you said, this whole Rod Serling thing with Twilight Zone was brilliant. So, but that was my take on that one particular scene. It just reminded me a lot of Inception and what happened in that movie.
And similar to Inception, like, the whole problem with that is, like, if it's coming, if these ideas are inside your head, I mean, that's why it's like, you know, are you, I was thinking, it's like, what would it be like to lose your mind? Because your mind is what allows you to evaluate whether you're sane or not. And if it's not working correctly, then like, do you like, hey, am I crazy? And then your voice says, no, not at all. And then, okay, good enough for me. You know, when it's when the phone call is coming from within the house, well, what do you do? I think that stuff is fascinating territory for the show to explore.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My number one is about Lenny, the nature of Lenny, because I still feel like I don't quite have a handle on it. I mean, it seemed like she was just another manifestation of the Shadow King / Amal Farouk, but she's hanging out with Oliver, who we think has Amal Farouk inside, and like when they're driving in the car and she's not there and then the camera shifts and then she appears. So why does he need this other manifestation of himself to appear next to him when he's alone? It seems like she's a separate entity to me. And then we see her in the pool with Oliver in the first scene, which I took to be Oliver's consciousness trapped inside. And it seems like, well, she says we're trapped. So I thought, well, maybe that's the consciousness of the original Lenny, which I'm pretty sure was David's friend in the mental institution. What was it called? Crossland or something. Anyways,
Clockworks.
Yeah. And then he accidentally like fused her into the wall. And then I think the Shadow King took over her form. But even still, it seems like they just love that actress. What's her name?
Aubrey Plaza,
and they want to use her, which is great because she is great. But I don't get what exactly is going on with Lenny.
I don't know what she is, because the whole in season one, it was come to find out it wasn't Lenny, it was Benny.
Right. So, yeah. So
it's like,
yeah.
So who is Lenny?
So is there even a real? Was there ever a real woman that looked like that?
Right.
Yeah, I was wondering, because you're talking about how the fact that now that the Shadow King's been kicked out of David's mind, that, you know, obviously the character, the show's called Legion, the character's based on it is called Legion. That springs to mind the demon-possessed man that Christ encountered that had multiple demons inside of him, not just one. His name is Legion.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'd be an interesting twist if Lenny is actually one of David's personality fragments that could be based on a real person, or may just be like a voice inside of his head that the Shadow King kind of got infected with. It went both ways. Like Shadow King came in, took over his mind, but Lenny is kind of now hitchhiking with him, and maybe she'll be an ally in the future. But I also think that she could just be, like you said, a bystander that got captured and was used by the Shadow King. But it does seem like instead of being like a face that he wears, like the fat bastard face, like the dog face, that she is actually a substantial mental presence of her own. She's an actual entity that he has captured.
Yeah, it seems like that, and I hope we find out more. All right, anything else you guys want to say about this episode before we move on?
Nope.
I don't think so. I think we covered it all.
Covered it pretty good. All right, cool. Let's move on to some news.
Okay, so a couple articles here. The first one that we have is from therap.com, and this is an interview with Noah Hawley. So the Legion showrunner Noah Hawley told The Wrap that David never really had a chance to live a happy life thanks to the monster that attached itself to him when he was a baby. But Hawley orchestrated David to be a tragic figure because he finds tragedies more interesting stories to tell. I think you mentioned this earlier, Aaron.
That is the exact article I was talking about.
Yeah, this has got some really good stuff in it. So he says, I'm really attracted to stories that are tragic on some level. Tragedy is different than drama. Tragedy has elements of the preventable to it. This idea that were a different choice to have been made or events to have unfolded differently, we wouldn't be in this mess, but we are. What makes it tragic is it was avoidable, Hawley continued. You're not dealing with something inevitable. You're not dealing with a bad person did a bad thing. You're dealing with someone who is in a crisis and is trying to make what they feel like are the right choices. But either because they're selfish or someone else is selfish or events unfold in an unpredictable way, they find themselves down a path towards something destructive. David, Hawley explained, is struggling with what choices to make in season two. He goes on to say, I find that much more compelling than simply having a guy in a white hat and a guy in a black hat kind of thing. So I like
that. Absolutely.
Yeah, I totally agree. I cannot argue with what he's doing. So the next one is from Observer.com. It's a little quick snippet of an interview. I took an interview that they had with him about the dance sequence. It says, in a discombobulating yet wildly entertaining dance battle sequence, but how the holy hell did Holly conjure this idea up? He says, why does action have to define meaning on some level? Holly says, if you look at our first hour, we have a dance battle. A fight is a very black and white, two-dimensional thing. We're fighting and I'm trying to beat you and you're trying to beat me. But what if what the scene is, part of it is peacocking and part of it is a courtship dance and part of it is fighting because I hate that I have to work with you, etc. You can't express that in a fight sequence, but in a dance fight, you can.
That's interesting. What would be the courtship? I like the idea of that, but I don't, with the dynamics between, well, we don't even, like I said, I don't even understand what Lenny is, but just thinking about the dynamics between those three characters, I'm not sure where the courtship would be.
Well, I mean, they're all three of them were participating in this dance.
Yeah.
And her dancing was very different than Oliver's and David's.
It was sexier.
Yeah. So I don't know if her part was the courtship part, but why a courtship part? What does that have to do with?
Yeah, and I wonder if, like, if courtship, I'm sure, is a fine word, but I wonder if, like, a seduction would be the better thing that they're
sure.
trying to,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, they're not the Marian type.
but it's a good point. Like, there's more dynamics.
No person takes a back seat.
Than just
no
pure.
One takes a back seat to Jemaine Clement and sexiness. Like those super, super high on the thigh boy shorts with the tan line showing. Ooh.
I don't know. I dug it. I totally.
I know. I'm not even joking. I think I've never seen this guy as a sexy figure, but like I thought he was intellectually sexy last year.
Yes,
he's like legit sexy this year.
Yeah.
Who says no to Oliver floating in that pool?
I enjoyed that scene very much, and I enjoyed Jemaine Clement season one and this season.
The you get David and Oliver. And their movements were very sharp and almost kind of aggressive, and it was great. And yeah, they're just battling it off. And then as soon as Lenny gets in on it, they both like stand back. Ooh. And then the music kind of shifts to be a little more feminine and she's a little more fluid. And yeah, it's really good.
Yep. I agree. Next one that we have is from The Hollywood Reporter. This is another piece that was taken from an interview with Noah Hawley about John Hamm as the narrator. So he says, I got to know John a little bit in the last year, Hawley, who has been preparing to collaborate with Hamm on the feature film Pale Blue Dot, co-starring Natalie Portman. I had written this narration for the first hour, and it started to feel like it would be in every episode. You always want a great voice for that, and I didn't think it should be one of our characters. In bringing Hamm into the Legion fold in this disembodied capacity, Holly sees season two's educational segments instantly possessing a sense of identity and a feeling of control. You really feel like the show itself has a point of view and it's all going somewhere, as opposed to either a random narrator or having one of the characters themselves narrate it. The narration feels a little tainted when it's coming from a character's point of view. So I thought that was super cool.
I wonder if that means that voice will never be attached to an actual character.
I think that is, he didn't completely rule it out. He didn't think that like his character would be on screen during the season, but he didn't completely rule it out either. But for now, that's how he's seeing it. Narration only. So this Pale Blue Dot is about an astronaut drama that Noah Hawley is directing. It centers on a married astronaut who returns to Earth after a mission and begins an affair with a fellow astronaut. She heads into a downward spiral as she loses her connection to her family, a condition that can afflict those who spend a long time in space. And when her lover begins another affair with an astronaut trainee, the bottom drops out. This is based on a true life astronaut love triangle in which a female mission specialist tried to kidnap a rival in 2007, which was the inspiration for the script.
Oh, yeah.
Which was written by Brian C. Brown and Elliot Giuseppe.
That was the one where she wore like her astronaut pants in the car.
She had
the
like
diaper.
A BB gun,
yeah.
And she used a diaper. She had really put a lot of astronaut thought into this whole thing.
Yeah. Well, they, you know, they've been talking a lot lately about how, because they're talking about this downward spiral as she loses her connection to her family, and how being up in space changes you. Didn't they just have a story come out that one of the astronauts that's been in space for a really long time has an identical twin, and his DNA has actually changed by a little bit of percentage from his identical twin because he's been out in space for so long?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I did see that, the cosmic radiation damage.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. He also had a thick, rocky orange skin.
And he keeps on saying it's clobbering time, like, you know, even yeah, when it's wildly weird. Inappropriate.
Yep. That's it for the news.
All right. Thank you. Let's move on to listener feedback. Aaron, would you like to go first?
Yes, Laura Willie Swink is first up, and she says, this one definitely required a second watching, or third or fourth, if I would add. Though a little slower than I would have hoped for a premiere, I'm going to consider this a Game of Thrones-style premiere, where it's a bit methodical as it sets up pieces on the chessboard. A few things that really stand out about this show that I love: the stylistic filming, which any other show might seem pretentious and indulgent, but here seem perfectly natural. The fantastic music selections, loved hearing Jane's Addiction played again, and that haunting rendition of White Rabbit was perfect. The creepy catatonic teeth grinders and the Zoolander-esque dance-off between Lenny, David, and Oliver. I don't know what the hell that was, but I loved it. And surreal and quirky Admiral Fukuyama and his mustachioed speak pipes. I think maybe from the artist-producer Bill
Sienkiewicz.
Yeah, what he said. Wild, wacky imagination. Ever read Stray Toasters? It's very similar in aesthetic. I have not read Stray Toasters, and I've never heard the term speak pipe before either. But.
No, like it.
Very nice summary there, Rima.
Ned Rogers says, I love this show. Even the dance battle kind of worked for me. So gonzo. And I think I'm in love with Sid. Sorry, ladies.
Poor ladies. Heather Hildebrand says, so did future Sid really send the orb to tell David to help Farouk, or did Farouk send the orb to abduct David and put the image of Sid into it to convince David to help him? She had the compass on, and I'm not sure Farouk would have known that, so I'm not sure now. P.S. Oh my god, kettles don't whistle with the spout open.
What's the spout open?
I didn't notice that. But yeah, that's what we don't know.
I don't make tea. I don't. If I do, I microwave my mug of water in a microwave like a civilized person.
I'm with you. I don't use a kettle.
There's probably tons of British folk clutching their pearls and holding their scrumpets or trumpets.
Yeah,
or
subscribing to other Legion moppets. Podcasts.
That's right. How do these people know nothing of tea?
I don't have anything against them. I think they're beautiful, but I just don't have the patience.
No, she's right. I'm just saying I didn't notice it was open. All right, that's our show, episode 9. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Thanks for coming on, Aaron. Like I said, please come back
Aaron.
Anytime you want.
Yeah, open invitation.
Yeah, I'll drop by. You know, you'll see my creepy tar chick creeping into the podcast every couple weeks or so.
Just creepy Minotaur with that weird mask or anything.
No.
Keep those teeth apart.
Yeah.
Going to have a mouth guard fitted for sure.
By the way, everybody, Aaron and his partner Jim have a bunch of fantastic podcasts about all kinds of different TV shows over at baldmove.com. So be sure to check them out over there. What's your guys' favorite lately?
Well, we're kind of in a holding pattern, waiting for some stuff to come back. But we are this week doing The Expanse. I think it actually is premiering tonight, Wednesday night. The Expanse is just a great science fiction or sci-fi television show that's also a science fiction show.
Sci-fi?
It is on sci-fi.
Okay.
It's like Game of Thrones in space because it's a very tight political thriller with fantastic science fiction elements thrown into it.
Cool.
It's a cold war between Earth, colonized Mars, and the asteroid belt. Which is super cool, and it's very hard science fiction. And then, of course, Westworld is coming back later this month, and we are super excited about that. It's the golden age of science fiction.
Heck yeah, that's right. Loving it.
And we're really excited. So check us out at baldmove.com if you'd like to get in on that.
Sweet.
Yeah. All right. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email or send a voice message to us at legion@podcastica.com.
You can find us on the web at facebook.com/legionpod.
Be sure to check out our other shows over there at podcastica.com. If you want to listen to two Westworld podcasts, you can find ours over there. That's been fun, man, to get into that. It's so we just did like season one, but from the perspective of someone who'd already seen the whole show. And it was like watching a whole different show the second time through. Once you know, I don't want to spoil it on this podcast, but once you know what's going on.
Yeah. In fact, it's so funny because I thought I had a joke written, but it just that was in the first 5 minutes of the show. And this was such a dense episode. But like when they're talking about the desert and the maze and all that, I'm like, am I watching a leaked episode or thing of like,
this
or
is
someone's
very
going to scalp and
desk.
Yeah, just scalp somebody and you'll see the maze. It's right underneath there. Like it was very Westworld-esque.
That was really great. And I feel with Westworld, you can never have too many podcasts to help you figure out what the hell is going on in that show as well. So I say subscribe to all of them.
It takes a village to figure that one out.
Yes.
Sure.
All right. Awesome. That is our show.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yep.
Yeah. Thanks, dude.